विहारे। जय राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ जय गिरिवर धारी। यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरा मन चारी जय राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव जय कुंज विहारी। जय विष्णु पाद परम हंस प्रभुराज आचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतोत्तर श्री श्रीमद् डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति माता स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस प्रभुराज आचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतोत्तर श्री श्रीमद् डिवाइन ग्रेस शील भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती ठाकुर प्रभुपाद की। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की श्रीमद् भागवतम की गौर प्रेमानंदी। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू लोटस फीट ऑफ श्री गुरु श्री गौरांग। गुड मॉर्निंग एवरीवन, वेलकम टू द भागवतम क्लास। Before I start, I just wanted to appreciate this morning's Guru Puja Kirtan. It's not every day we have Subha Prabhu leading Kirtan, and it was so ecstatic. I wish, it was really nice. So thank you for doing that. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto 10, Chapter 17, Text 11 and 12. It's on the board, is 11. So channel 11. Atra pravishya garudo yadi matyan sakhadati sadhya praner viyujeta satyametad bravimi aham. Atra pravishya garudo yadi matyan sakhadati sadhya praner viyujeta satyametad bravimi aham. Vaishnavas, atra pravishya garudo यदि मत्स्यंस खादति सत्यप्राणैर्वियुजेत सत्यमेतद्ब्रवीमि अहम् अत्र प्रविश्य गरुडो यदि मत्स्यंस खादति सत्यप्राणैर्वियुजेत सत्यमेतद्ब्रवीमि अहम् अत्र प्रविश्य गरुडो सुखामति सत्यप्राणैर्वियुजेत सत्यमेतद्ब्रवीमि अहम् अत्र प्रविष्ट गरुडो निमात्स्यांस खादति युजेत सत्यमेतद्ब्रवीमि अहम् अत्र प्रविश्य गरुडो यदि मत्स्यंस खादति प्राणेत सत्यमेतद्ब्रवीमि अहम् अत्र इन दिस लेक प्रविश्य एंटरिंग गरुडः गरुडः यदि इफ मत्स्यान द फिश सह ही खादति ईट्स सद्यः इमीडिएटली प्राणाय ऑफ हिज फोर्स ऑफ लाइफ वियुजेता will become deprived. Satyam, truthfully, etat, this, bravimi, am speaking, aham, I. Translation and purport by the servants of His Divine Grace, Kijai. If Garuda ever again enters this lake and eats the fish here, he will immediately lose his life. What I'm saying is the truth. So this is the curse of Sabari Muni to Garuda, that if he ever enters this lake and eats the fish, he will immediately die. Purport. The Acharyas explain in this regard that because of Sabari Muni's material attachment and affection for a fish, he failed to see the situation from the spiritual viewpoint. The ninth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam describes his fall down for this offense. Because of false pride, Sabari Muni lost his power of austerity, and with it, very key point, his spiritual beauty and happiness. When Garuda came to the Yamuna, Sabari Muni thought, quote, although he may be a personal associate of the Supreme Lord, I will still curse him and even kill him if he disobeys my order. Such an offensive attitude against an exalted Vaishnav will certainly destroy one's auspicious position in life. As the ninth canto describes, Sabari Muni married many beautiful women and suffered greatly in their association. But because he had once become glorious by taking shelter of the Yamuna River in Sri Vrindavan, he was ultimately delivered. And text 12, I'll just recite it by myself. It's also on the board for this class. Tat kaliya param veda nanya kashchana leliha avatsit garudad bhita krishnina cha vivasitaha. Translation, of all the serpents, only Kaliya came to know of this affair, and in fear of Garuda, he took a residence in that Yamuna lake. Later, Lord Krishna drove him out. Om Agyanatitimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Tvishe Namaha Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo 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 Hare Hare Jai, welcome everyone, good morning. We have a lot of ground to cover today. This is a really big topic, and I found some nice things that I want to share and discuss with the devotees, and hopefully we can have some sort of a discussion afterwards. I'll try to stop at 8:20, so we have 10 minutes to discuss. So the story is at this point that Sabari Muni, having seen the two fish breaking a regulative principle, is himself attracted, or let's say what happens is that he sees that, you know, when Garuda comes and eats the fish, he feels very, the attraction of the fish comes much later. Sorry, I'm like jumping stories here. But basically, yeah, as a result of seeing Garuda eat the fish in the lake where he was meditating, he decides to curse Garuda in a very vicious way. So our acharyas explain that there's a difference between offending a devotee and a misunderstanding. So this is an offense when one has a conscious attempt to actually, you could say, malign or hurt a Vaishnav. That is considered a Vaishnava Parad. So Sabari Muni committed a Vaishnava Parad because Garuda is a devotee of the Lord. And Sabari very conscientiously, in fact, Srila Jiva, the acharyas explain his inner thoughts. He says, although he may be a personal associate of the Supreme Lord, I will still curse him and kill him if he disobeys my order. So this is what it means to offend a Vaishnav. We have a conscious, very intentful desire to want to hurt them and criticize them and malign their reputation. This is what Sabari Muni did, and as a result of that, he lost his Brahman Tejas. He actually fell, Jiva Goswami explains, he fell from the platform of Brahman realization as a result of his offense to a devotee of the Lord. That's how heavy it was. And therefore, he lost his spiritual beauty and happiness, because that platform of Brahman realization is a platform of happiness and satisfaction, but he couldn't maintain it. He couldn't maintain it because he made that offense to a devotee. And I think we're all aware in our long and short, we have many senior devotees here. We all have seen the result of devotees who offend and criticize. They, at some point, may be very happy in their Krishna consciousness, but then at some point, they struggle, they are unable to maintain their spiritual austerity, their vows, and then they're unable to maintain their practice, and then they have to, you know, maybe for some time step away from devotional sangha and suffer. And as a result of that, like what happened to Sabari Muni, he suffered in the association of his, was it 40 or 50 very beautiful princesses? Like 40 or 50, a large number of many attractive princesses. And in their association, he did many things that he never did as a sage, meditating underwater. And later on lamented that, what have I done? I lost my self-realization. I lost my spiritual purity and strength just for the sake of sense gratification. So he suffered, and then as a result, he came back and then he resumed his spiritual practice after having taken a little detour. So, you know, when we make a mistake, we'll be punished for it. And Vaishnava Prad is a mistake that Krishna doesn't take too lightly. We can commit sinful activities, not consciously, by the way, that's also not good, but out of helplessness, a devotee might even commit a sinful activity, and Krishna will just forgive it, because a sin is not such a big thing, but an offense to a Vaishnava is a very big thing. And the scriptures compare it to the difference between like a mountain being covered by dust, which can be easily wiped away, that's a sinful activity, versus a thunderstorm, like striking the rocks of a mountain that can make the rocks crack. It's a very heavy thing. It's much more serious than just a little bit of dust covering the mountain. So I thought today we would hear some things, different perspectives, different stories from the Shastras, where as a result of offenses, drastic reactions took place. So there's two pastimes of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that always stand out for me in this regard. And the first is the pastime of Srivast Thakur. So I'll just read a few verses here. I'll just give a little context. So Navadvip, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would have ecstatic kirtans in the house of Srivast, Pandit. And these kirtans were very intimate, they were very private, and not everybody was invited to these kirtans. As a result, people are becoming a little envious, right? Just like if I tell, you know, if you find out that there was a pizza party last night in the kitchen basement, and you were the only brahmachari that wasn't invited, you might feel a little bit like, hey, you know, or maybe the only mataji that wasn't invited, and you might feel like, you know, am I not cool? You know, what's wrong? So people feel left out. They were feeling left out. And so they started criticizing Srivast Thakur, that, you know, who is this, who are these Vaishnavas? In fact, they used to say, oh, they must be so hungry that they have to stay up all night screaming. And that is the disturbance that is being caused by their kirtan. They would say all kinds of things about the Vaishnavas who are actually just absorbed in ecstasy. So there was this one particular Brahmin there, his name was Gopal Chappal, and he was very envious of Srivast. So he decided to malign his reputation by, overnight he left articles for the worship of Kali, Durga, outside his house. Now in Bengal, there's two kinds of religious people. There's Vaishnavas and then there's worshippers of Kali. And worshippers of Kali are usually a little bit more low class because they indulge in eating meat and drinking wine. So it's very low class behavior. So for a Brahmana, like a reputable person like Srivast, to be worshipping Kali is considered low class behavior. So that's what this Gopal Chappal was hoping for, that by leaving this evidence for some, you know, it's like me taking a few, I don't know, some DVDs or something and leaving them in Daniel's locker, you know, and then people are like, oh my God, there's all these like video game DVDs here, like maybe Daniel's playing video games secretly in the Brahmacharya Ashram, something to malign his pure reputation that he has in our temple. So like that, that's what this Brahmana was thinking of doing, that's what he did. So here's what happens when Srivast opens the door in the morning, and we'll see, we'll hear what happens. So this is what Gopal Chappal did. He said, it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, on the upper portion of a plantain leaf, he placed such paraphernalia for worship as odafula, turmeric, vermilion, red sandalwood, and rice. So these are items that are usually used to worship Durga. He placed a pot of wine besides all of this, and in the morning when Srivast Thakur opened his door, he saw this paraphernalia. Srivast Thakur called for all the respectable gentlemen of the neighborhood and smilingly addressed them as follows. So he didn't try to hide the evidence. He didn't try to brush it under a banana leaf and pretend like nothing happened and purify the place with a little cow dung. He didn't do any of that. Here's what he did. He said to everyone, gentlemen, every night I worship the goddess Bhavani. Since the paraphernalia for the worship is present here, now all of you respectable brahmanas and members of the higher castes can understand my position. So he conscientiously wanted to be seen in a lower light. This was his response. Then all the assembled gentlemen exclaimed, what is this? What is this? Who has performed such a mischievous activity? Who is that sinful man? They called for a sweeper who threw all the items of worship far away and cleansed the place by mopping it with a mixture of water and cow dung. So the good people of Navadvip didn't believe Srivast. They knew that he's a proper Vaishnav, and so somebody was trying to frame him. After 3 days, leprosy attacked Gopal Chappal and blood oozed from all sores over his body. So that was the result he got for trying to, for maligning Srivast Thakur's reputation. Incessantly covered with germs and insects biting him all over his body, Gopal Chappal felt unbearable pain, his entire body burned in distress. Since leprosy is an infectious disease, Gopal Chappal left the village to sit down on the bank of the Ganga underneath a tree. One day, however, he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passing by and spoke to him as follows. So here he is suffering, you know, in the pain, like, you know, the thongs of leprosy, a very, very, like, deadly and very painful disease. It makes you a social outcast. I don't know if you've ever seen pictures of leprosy patients, but nobody wants to be around them. It's very sad, actually, and they're usually kept outside in some confined area because the disease is infectious. So he's all by himself suffering under this tree, and then he sees Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he thinks, oh, this is my hope, this is my one shot at getting some salvation. So Gopal Chappal says to him, my dear nephew, I'm your maternal uncle in our village relationship. Please see how greatly this attack of leprosy has afflicted me. As an incarnation of God, you are delivering so many fallen souls. I am also a greatly unhappy fallen soul. kindly deliver me by your mercy. So Prabhupada writes in the purport here, Gopal Chopal simply wanted to be delivered from the bodily sufferings of leprosy, but Sri Chaitanya, although accepting his sincere appeal, wanted to inform him of the real cause of suffering. Right? So what happens for us also, sometimes in our Krishna consciousness, we suffer the reaction to offenses. We don't realize it, but that's what they are. You know, because our karma is already finished. If you have any doubts about that, Josh wrote a paper about it. You can ask him. So our karma is already finished. So what are we suffering from? We're suffering the reactions of our offenses. Why? Because Krishna wants to tweak our behavior a little bit. He's like, listen, I want perfect devotional service. I want pure devotional service. I want you to be prepared to serve me for the rest of your existence. So here's some things in your character that need to be checked, that need to be reformed. So we'll suffer reactions. But when we're not so evolved, we just look at the reaction and try to overcome the reaction itself without thinking a little bit more deeply, you know, what is this, where is this coming from? Where is this coming? And I'll tell a story about this in 1 second after I finish this pastime. Hearing this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared greatly angry, and in that angry mood, he spoke some words chastising him. He says, "Oh, sinful person!" I was about to point, but I don't want to point at a Vaishnava. I'll just point at the floor. "Oh, sinful person, envious of pure devotees, I shall not deliver you. Rather, I shall have you bitten by these germs for many millions of years." Now, we might think, whoa, like, isn't he Patita Pavana, savior of the fallen? Whatever happened to all of that, you know? Millions of years. Sounds really heavy. And Srila Prabhupada writes, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted Gopal Chapal to understand the cause of his suffering. Any person who disturbs a pure devotee engaged in broadcasting the holy name of the Lord is certainly punished like Gopal Chapal. This is the instruction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As we shall see, one who offends a pure devotee can never satisfy Chaitanya Mahaprabhu unless and until he sincerely regrets his offense and thus rectified. So anyways, it continues. Mahaprabhu chastises him, he apologizes, and that's the only way to overcome offense to a Vaishnava is by, you know, feelings of regret. There's another quick story that just came to mind when we were reading this pastime. This is from the Ramayana, and it comes early on in the Ramayana when King Dashrath was at one point hunting through the forest. And he was basically chasing after a deer. And he lost the deer in the thick foliage. And at one point he heard the sound of like gluck, 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 like as if someone's drinking something. So he thought this must be the deer. So he hid behind a tree and he pointed his arrow in the direction where the sound was coming from. And he shot. And when the arrow pierced whatever he shot at, he heard the sound going, "Ah!" And then Dashrath realized, wait a second, that's not the sound of a deer. So he came out of the covering and he saw he had shot this young Brahmin boy who was actually collecting water. And this young Brahmin boy, his name was, I forget. His parents were blind, and they used to live in this forest and he used to take care of them. So when Dashrath realized what he had done, he somehow found his way to the house of his parents, the hut where his parents were, and they were just blind, both mother and father. So when they heard the sound of footsteps, you know, they thought it was their son who had returned with water for them. So they immediately asked, "Oh, my dear son, have you returned with water for us? We were very thirsty." And King Dashrath said, "It is not your son. It is the killer of your son." And then he explained to the parents what he had done, that he had mistaken their son for a deer and killed him. And then the first reaction of the parents wasn't like, "How could you? Like, couldn't you pay more attention? Like, couldn't you at least see the deer before you shot at it? Like, what's wrong with you?" The first reaction of the father was, "I wonder if this is some offense I've made to the deity." Very interesting point, you know. He thought, maybe I've made some offenses to the deity and that's why I'm getting a reaction for this now. So it's interesting how we may also get suffering sometimes, but it's up to us to make that connection. Like, maybe I made a mistake and that's why I'm getting this reaction. So another nice pastime from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I'll just read a few verses from it, is that of Ramachandra Puri. And this comes from the Antya-lila of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it's very instructive actually. So I'll read a little bit and then say a few things about this pastime. So, let's see, where do we pick up from? Okay, we'll start from here. This is Antya-lila, chapter 8, text 9. Don't worry so much about the context because you'll pick up on the story in 2 seconds. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also offered obeisances unto Ramachandra Puri, who then embraced him and thus remembered Krishna. The three of them talked about Krishna for some time, and then Jagadananda Pandit came and extended an invitation to Ramachandra Puri. A large quantity of remnants of food from Lord Jagannath was brought in for distribution. Ramachandra Puri ate sumptuously, and then he wanted to find faults in Jagadananda Pandit. After finishing his meal, Ramachandra Puri requested, "My dear Jagadananda, please listen. You eat the food that is left." With great eagerness, Ramachandra Puri seated Jagadananda Pandit and personally served him prasadam. Encouraging him again and again, Ramachandra Puri fed him sumptuously, but when Jagadananda Pandit had washed his hands and mouth, Ramachandra Puri began to criticize him. He said, "I have heard that the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eat more than necessary. Now I have directly seen that this is true. Feeding a sannyasi too much breaks his regulated principles, for when a sannyasi eats too much, his renunciation is destroyed." So you see what's happening, he's acting with duplicity. He invites Jagadananda Pandit to take prasad and overfeeds him only so he can find fault with him later on. So it's this pretense of being hospitable and loving when internally he just wants to find fault. And this duplicity is being brought out in this passage, and we'll see the result of that. He gets rejected by his own spiritual master. And then he says, the characteristics of Ramachandra Puri was that first he would induce someone to eat more than necessary, and then he would criticize him. Formerly, when Madhavendra Puri was at the last stage of his life, Ramachandra Puri came to where he was staying. This was his guru. Madhavendra Puri was chanting the holy names of Krishna, and sometimes he would cry, "Oh my Lord, I did not get shelter in Mathura." Then Ramachandra Puri was so foolish that he fearlessly dared to instruct his own spiritual master. Quote, "If you're in full transcendental bliss," he said, "you should not only remember Brahman. Why are you crying?" Madhavendra Puri was so exalted that he was crying tears of separation, feelings of separation from Krishna. And Ramachandra Puri thought he could instruct his own guru in saying, "Why are you crying? Like, you should be self-situated in Brahman realization. Be peaceful. Be shanti. And then what did Madhavendra Puri tell his disciple? Hearing this instruction, Madhavendra Puri, greatly angry, rebuked him by saying, "Get out, you sinful rascal. Do not show me your face. Go anywhere else you like. If I die seeing your face, I shall not achieve the destination of my life." Anyways, there's other passages of Ramachandra Puri. He did something very similar to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, and he was very much punished for it. And I was just bringing out these pastimes to show that this is like, you could say, offense in a very classical way. When we talk about offending a devotee, this is what we mean. We mean like a conscious intent to try to hurt them, malign their reputation, find fault with them. What we experience a lot in devotional sangha often is misunderstanding. You know, we misunderstand each other. We misunderstand each other's intentions. You know, we might speak a little roughly. It may not be our intention. We may not want to speak roughly, but it just comes out because we're conditioned by the modes of nature. So then things become a little bit more subtle, right? Things become a little bit more subtle. So I thought we should discuss some of the more subtle ways also in which we might sometimes offend, hurt, or misunderstand a Vaishnava. And what are some of the things that Prabhupada has said in this regard, and how should we deal with this situation? So I'll start this by sharing a quote from Srila Prabhupada. He wrote in a letter in 1967, he said, "This personal grudge is not inhuman." And as I have told you many times, that individualism is the cause of personal misunderstanding. When such individualism, however, is employed in the center of Krishna, there is no harm, even if there is personal misunderstanding. So Srila Prabhupada is acknowledging that because we're individuals, we have tendencies and proclivities, right? Some people like certain things, and some people like certain other things. Some people like doing things very quickly, this guy. Some people like doing things very carefully and thoughtfully. So because of our individual differences, we might sometimes clash, you know? Some people, like we say in ISKCON, some people are very conservative. You know, some people are very liberal. You know, we hear this in ISKCON a lot. You know, some people think women should become gurus. Some people think women shouldn't become gurus. There's all kinds of opinions that we disagree upon, right? Some people think that we should preach more to this community of people. Some people think we shouldn't preach to this community of people. So in this way, there's individualism. And Prabhupada's saying that's to be expected because we're not all going to become the same human beings. But if we, in a smart, intelligent way, we agree to recognize our individuality and then use that individuality in Krishna's service, then we can find some harmony, right? Respect and appreciate, and at the same time, use that individuality in Krishna's service. So, that sounds nice, right? It sounds ideal, but we don't live in an ideal world. So in spite of having these ideal ideas, we'll still find disagreement and sometimes conflict. So I thought I'd share a few things. There's three things that one can do, practically speaking, when we're dealing with, you could say, misunderstandings, confusions, challenges in devotee relationships where the tendency for offense might come up, right? So we may not consciously want to offend someone, but because of a misunderstanding, we might end up offending somebody because it escalates, right? So there's three things that we can consider. The first is you may want to consider avoiding their association. So I'll read a verse and explain a purport from Srila Prabhupada in the third canto. We see all devotees as Vaishnavas. It's not that, you know, we want to start judging and picking and choosing. But there is room for sometimes avoiding the association of certain devotees whose association might lead to the offensive mentality. And Prabhupada writes here in the third canto, I'll read this verse here. Okay, so the verse says, devotional service executed by a person who is envious, proud, violent, and angry, and who is a separatist, is considered to be in the mode of darkness. This is Kapil Dev's instructions to his mother, Devahuti. And then Srila Prabhupada writes in this regard, he says, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur advises that a Vaishnava who is not of good character should be avoided. A Vaishnava is one who has taken the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the ultimate goal of life, but if one is not pure and still has motives, then he's not a Vaishnava of the first order of good character. One may offer his respects to such a Vaishnava because he has accepted the Supreme Lord as the ultimate goal of life, but one should not keep company with a Vaishnava who is in the mode of ignorance. So this sounds a bit harsh, right? And we don't want to, I'm not saying that we should not go out and think, well, this devotee, he looks like he's in the mode of ignorance. I should definitely avoid him. You know, it's not so cookie cutter as that. We have to be sincere. And Prabhupada makes that qualification. We have to respect that this person has surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if we're noticing that the association of certain devotees perhaps instigates maybe like unhealthy thoughts or behaviors or not a sincere desire to serve, then the recommendation is you keep a distance. You keep a distance. And this is also healthy. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told his disciples, nobody can go and see Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. Why? Because he was so eccentric. Because he would, you know, wear a kopan and sit in a latrine chanting Hare Krishna, that neophyte devotees would think, when was the last time you took a shower? You know, I mean, sitting, the latrine is a very muchi place, you know, this is very not sattvic behavior at all. So a neophyte devotee would see these externals and offend a Mahabhagavat. So then Srila Bhakti's recommendation was, you just stay away because you don't know how to handle fire. I believe in his entourage, there was only one devotee, one brahmachari, who was allowed to go and serve Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji and bring him his prasad and things like that, because it's such a sensitive thing. You know, you could easily criticize a Mahabhagavat. Another thing we can do in a devotional setting, when the subtlety of misunderstandings and perhaps some feelings of being hurt come up in devotional relationships, is we can bring the issue to someone who can actually address it. So say I have a misunderstanding with devotee X, and we might potentially end up offending each other, but we're not at the level where we can address each other's feelings. Human relationships are very complex, and last night Daniel had a really nice conversation. We don't always know what's required to fix the relationship, right? Sometimes there's a misunderstanding with someone, and we may not be perfect at knowing exactly what to say or what to do to kind of resolve the misunderstanding. Human relationships are very complex, right? So we have to let the Krishna factor do his thing. But sometimes if we have an issue with a devotee, then we may not be able to address it directly. We can bring it to someone who they will hear from. You know what I'm saying? Maybe a close friend of theirs, or maybe their elders, someone like that. We may not be in the capacity to go in and be like, Prabhu, you know, you said this, you did this, and this is wrong. They might look at us and think, who are you to tell me that? You know, and then might feel offended as a result. And there is a precedent for that. I found a nice letter from Srila Prabhupada, where he's also recommending a similar strategy. He wrote in 1970, now all of my disciples must work combinedly and with cooperation to spread the Sankirtan movement. If you cannot work together, then my work is stopped up. Prabhupada's English. My work is stopped up. I like that. If you cannot work together, then my work is stopped up. Our society is like one big family, and our relationships should be based on love and trust. We must give up the fighting spirit and use our intelligence to push ahead. You should accept help from your God brothers. Prabhupada gives this instruction that the purpose of the society is to spread Krishna consciousness. There should be love and trust, but we do have this fighting spirit. And when that feeling comes up, then we should take help from our God brothers. Of course, in those days, everybody was a God brother because they were all Prabhupada disciples. But, you know, we're all Prabhupada's grandchildren, so I think if he was here today, he would say, you should take help from your, you know, other grandsons. Like, you know, you should take help from your brothers and sisters who are in the society. And then he even says, now I have set up the governing body commission to handle management, questions of philosophy, and personal problems. So, you know, when we have qualified managers in our community, then we can approach them to help resolve interpersonal conflict. It's very healthy. If you have issues with devotees, then it's not good to let them just fester and kind of carry misunderstandings. It's good to try to resolve these things. And if we can't do it one-on-one, then we can bring it to elders and other people. The last point I wanted to mention in terms of this particular topic is we can try to have an open and respectful dialogue that requires some emotional maturity. When we have a misunderstanding with a devotee, then it takes a lot of emotional maturity to acknowledge where we could have been wrong and not project the tendency to blame on the other person. So not everybody has that ability. Most of us may not be so emotionally developed, so we tend to get into conversations that are sensitive, and we come off very defensive or very much on the attack because we don't want to accept any blame. I'm just speaking for myself, you know. So then it may not be in our capacity to have a very open and respectful dialogue. If we can, that's wonderful, you know. But the other approach then is to also just take shelter of one's service. So what might happen is we may not be able to resolve the conflict or the disagreement, but at least we can respect the devotee and just pour our heart and energy into doing our service very nicely, you know. And in that way, Krishna will purify our heart and might give us the perspective we need to resolve the situation. And I got this idea from Srila Prabhupada writes in 1968, I am glad to learn that your cooperation for the society is appreciated by the authorities. We should learn to forget and forgive minor incidents, right? Because this is normal. Because Prabhupada writes, whenever there are two men in a place, there's always some misunderstanding, right? It's just bound to happen. As soon as we, you know, when ideas collide, it's natural that there might be some, you know, isn't it? It's just what happens in life. Such misunderstanding happens even between husband and wife, what to speak of others, but we have to adjust these things on the basis of Krishna consciousness. Okay, sorry, actually, this is a good quote, but I wanted to read the second one. That's the real one I want to read. So this is, he writes here in 1972, Hamsa Dutta is maintaining his position of service, so why, even if a little fighting, you should go away? We should never give up our duty. My godbrothers always discouraged me, but I did not give up. I am doing my duty and always keeping my spiritual master in front. Even if there is some difficulty or hardship, or even if my godbrothers may not cooperate, or they may be fighting, still, I must perform my duty to my spiritual master and not become discouraged and go away. That would be my weakness. This is the quote I really wanted to share. So in situations where things get a little tense, there's disagreements, there's conflicts, there's an inability to understand the other person's perspective, and it's so easy to just walk away. In the material world, when relationships are difficult, our natural response is either to blame, and if we're not going to blame, then we just, okay, fine, we'll just agree to disagree and live in separate universes. You know what I'm saying? And that can work if you're not carrying any resentment in your heart. Like, if you're not actually carrying any negative feelings towards the other person, then that strategy may be fine, because sometimes we don't know what it takes to resolve a thing. But in any case, Prabhupada's saying here that don't give up your duty. So whatever our service is, whatever service we've been given, you know, by our gurus and by the authorities, that should always be respected, maintained, and perhaps engaged in with full vigor and enthusiasm. That's very important. If we find ourselves becoming a little morose, then maybe it's a sign that we're being afflicted by like lower modes of nature, and it may not be the most Krishna conscious response. So, okay, I have 5 minutes. I just wanted to share one last thing that was really nice. Let's see. Yeah, so this is coming from an old edition of the Krishna Kathamrita Bindu magazine. And I always remembered this because it's basically a short translation of a book by Sri Vallabhacharya, who's an acharya in the Pushti Marg. And he wrote this book called the Viveka Dhairya Ashraya. Viveka means wisdom. Dhairya means, what is dhairya? Dhairya, what does dhairya mean? Patience. And what does ashraya mean? Shelter. So he gives comments on each of these points, Viveka, Dhairya, and Ashraya. And this is a translation for how he defines shelter. It's very nice. He says, in this world, as well as in the next, Lord Hari is the shelter in all ways, especially, and then he lists categories when the Lord should be our shelter. When he takes away all our distress, when we commit a sinful activity, when fear arises, when any personal desires or religious activities are not fulfilled. Now here's one that's really relevant for this particular discussion. When ill feelings for other devotees arise in our heart. When we find ourselves utterly devoid of bhakti. When other devotees offend us. That's also very crucial for this discussion. If we feel offended by a devotee, then instead of getting into the blame game, we can take shelter of Krishna. In all impossible or possible tasks. When false ego arises due to thinking of oneself as the master or provider of family members, right? So this abhimanyu might be there that I'm the one taking care of my family, when in fact it's Krishna. When such family members dependent on us insult us, when disciples insult us, and here's what he says, in all such circumstances, to make one's mind transcendental to these disturbances, one should constantly remember in one's mind and recite aloud that Hari is the only shelter. Beautiful, right? That when we have this, when someone offends us, or we have ill feelings towards a Vaishnava, or somebody insults us, then Vallabhacharya is saying, one should constantly remember in one's mind and recite aloud that Hari is the only shelter. So much more could be spoken on this topic. We've heard so many classes, I'm sure all of us, on the importance of Trinadapi Sunichi and being humbler than a blade of grass, and being, you know, mindful, respectful, tolerant. So we've heard all of these things before. I found in my own personal application, it's not always so easy to be more tolerant than a blade of grass and as humble as a piece of straw. I find that I'm very contaminated, so I need some processing upstairs to kind of actually be humble and be forgiving and be tolerant. It doesn't just happen spontaneously. So for me, understanding a little bit at a deeper level, what are the subtle things that are happening? How can I address them? How can I communicate my feelings in a non-violent way, respectful way, by taking shelter of Krishna? Ultimately, with the desire to want to respect and serve as devotees, then the strength to do that can manifest, right? If that's our ultimate goal, that Krishna, I want to move past this negative feeling, this disturbance, and continue to serve you and continue to serve your devotees, then Krishna might give the intelligence for how we can move in such a situation. That's my practice. It's not always so easy to be humble and tolerant. And one thing I learned from Jai Jagannath, which I find to be very, very helpful, and I've applied this in certain situations when things became really intense, is if you have a misunderstanding with a devotee, if we feel like we've offended someone, then it's best to just immediately go up to them and offer our obeisances. Just offer our obeisances and just say, Prabhu, Mataji, I said something, I did something, I feel like I may have offended you. Did I? You know? And you know, most people's hearts will melt if we do something like that, you know. So, and then it's just crushed, and then Krishna is happy. Like, okay, you made a mistake, you made a boo boo, and you rectified it by being humble. So, yeah, this is a huge topic, offenses and avoiding offenses. But I'll stop here. It's 8:19. If anybody has something they would like to add or correct me on something, or maybe a reflection. Please feel free to share anything. Oh, Daniel's got a reflection.
Not so much a question, but just like an appreciation.
Yeah, yeah, reflection, yeah.
Out of the three kind of steps that you talked about, one was taking shelter of your service.
Yeah.
And you gave the example of Srila Prabhupada, and so how he was talking about how, like, at every angle, he was getting discouraged by his godbrothers, or like if it wasn't his family, it was his godbrothers. Just like there was like stuff that was constantly just kind of like beating him down, and he had every reason to not go and do this like monumental service and stuff, but he still did. And he said, "How did it go?" He said, "If I gave up my service, then it would be my loss,
my weakness."
My weakness.
He said, "I kept my spiritual master in front, and I did my duty."
Exactly. Yeah. And so I thought that was a good point, because typically, like, if we feel like discouraged from other people when we're doing our service, and like the general like human kind of response is like, all right, well, I'm just going to stop doing my service, or I'm just going to distance myself, and that'll show them. Then they'll be really sorry that they offended me and stuff. And but that's not the mature way to go about it. So then, if you know you decide to just move forward and continue to do your service despite all of those roadblocks. And even it can serve as like a way to even do your service better and be like, all right, well, this is for my purification, so I'm just going to do it better. And then, you know, maybe it'll, you know, Krishna will give you the intelligence at that point because he sees that you have a good service attitude. Then he'll give you the intelligence to kind of harmonize the situation.
Nice point. Yeah, that maybe I do it even better. That takes a lot of sincerity. Josh has a reflection.
Thank you for a very thoughtful kind of breakdown of this topic, because I find it very, very important. Especially, you know, in the beginning you laid out kind of the dichotomy of extreme aparad and then what goes on between devotees in general. And oftentimes we see that aparad is used in such a way as an offense or defense mechanism in order to continue being quite impersonal, you know, and in order to not deal with the things that are in one's hearts and to not work on relationships. A lot of times we see that's an aparad, Prabhu. That's aparad. And then, you know, it's just like, now we have to stop because Vaishnava aparad happened. And so now the relationship can't
grow
forward.
You know?
And we see this in many ways. We see this like even in a kind of vicarious way, you know, looking at other people. We see this play out a lot in our society. And I'm always reminded of a comment by Srila Prabhupada where he said that actually everyone in the society is like diamonds in a tumbler. So everybody starts out quite rough. But what a tumbler does is you put a bunch of diamonds in a tumbler and you spin it, and then those diamonds bang against each other. And they all end up coming out smooth and beautiful. So Prabhupada said, this is what you're all doing. You're all arguing with each other and you're fighting these, like you were highlighting, these little more subtle kind of the bickering that happens amongst younger devotees and people who aren't spiritually perfected, we can say. As younger devotees, people who aren't uttamadhikaris, this kind of banging around. But someone who has some faith in the process and some understanding of the gravity of what they're going through will know that actually I just have to take shelter of the fact that continuing being personal, having, you know, taking shelter of the people around me, even if I make mistakes, even if they make mistakes, that will help to move through that.
It's a
deep thing. I think all of us have some personal experience here, and it's sometimes scary to even bring up. But thank you so much for elucidating so nicely and thinking about it so deeply.
Thank you for also sharing this reflection. It just reminded me of one small thing I forgot to mention, which is that many times we don't realize that when we do have a misunderstanding with a devotee or someone, say, hurts us or something, usually Krishna is trying to teach us something. But we make the mistake of blaming the instrument instead of seeing that okay, super soul is in his heart or super soul is in her heart, and maybe she or he acted this way because I have something to learn, I have something I have to process. And it takes a lot of mercy to have that realization, and it's not, you know, if one does, it's wonderful. But I was just wondering before class over if Krishna Arjuna Mataji and Subal Prabhu have anything they would like to add.
Thanks, Arisham Prabhu. I thought that I appreciated very much your research of the different approaches that Prabhupada recommended in different situations, you know, like sometimes you even may avoid confrontation or dealing directly with a thing. Sometimes you do directly deal with that. So there's different
strategies.
Yeah. And one thing that I sort of, you know, through the years of practicing experience too, is that in one sense, one have to discriminate when to apply a particular strategy accordingly to the situation.
Right.
And you explained that Krishna gives the intelligence to discriminate if one's, you know, focusing on the internal part, especially the principles of Trinada, Vishnichina. And naturally, Krishna will give the intelligence of how to properly deal with the situations, which is a principle and a very important aspect. However, the fact that you have to discriminate, because sometimes it is not necessarily in all situations who apply that I will approach the devotee and deal directly with the misunderstanding. Mm. Sometimes you have to give a space for the proper moment to happen.
Exactly, exactly.
So, there's a lot of discrimination that have to be happened.
And
discrimination means that you have to have some maturity.
Right.
And sort of understanding, experience. If you don't, if you feel, sort of a loss with, in terms of cooperation, in terms of understanding each other and working with each other, in an effective way, and being able to have a trusting, loving relationship in spite of our differences, then what would you say, what thoughts do you have in terms of dealing with a situation when we have, we're at loss in terms of how to resolve these things.
Yeah, I mean, that's the million-dollar question. And like you said, it's not like there's one clear-cut strategy that'll work in all situations, right? It depends on the nature of the relationship, the circumstances themselves. I mean, so many factors are involved. But I think one principle that I do feel is perhaps universally relevant in these situations and any situations like this is to give the other person the benefit of the doubt that perhaps they have good intentions and they may have made a mistake. And just allow, at least we can think for ourselves, maybe I haven't fully understood the situation. I'm just speaking from my own personal experience, that if I give myself a little bit of room to think that maybe I need to correct my understanding also, then I feel like the situation might move and get resolved in the right direction, potentially. Usually I find that it's very hard for me to come to that point, because I usually see things in a way of, well, I'm right for the most part, almost entirely, and the other person is mostly wrong. So from that point of view, then the situation can never get resolved. So I feel like our work is to give them the benefit of the doubt that maybe they meant well, but they misunderstood or couldn't express themselves. And perhaps I have something I need to learn also. And then maybe some harmony can be resolved. Otherwise, it's so... Yeah, it's the question you're asking is like, I'm dealing with this now. I have like two different friends whose marriages are falling apart, and they tell me every little thing that's happening, and it's so complicated. Where do you begin to find? It's like a knot. You're trying to find the first place where the knot took place to untangle it. It's so complicated. So I keep learning the same thing. I'm like, in your heart, you have to want something. You have to want a solution. And you have to be willing to accept that maybe you were also wrong. And that's the only way to start harmonizing and finding resolve, But because as long as each party thinks that I'm completely right, then how can there ever be a resolution, right? Mother Krishna Saraswati psychology, maybe she can add something to this, right? But at least we have to acknowledge that maybe I've done something I need to learn. And then give the other person the benefit of the doubt, and then from there maybe some resolution can emerge. But yeah... I mean, my experience in life is very little compared to yours, so that's all I can say from what little I know. But does anybody else want to add something to that? Mother Krishna Arjuna?
Well, Harishanthi, I was appreciating your reflection at the end of, on a personal level, that it's requires quite a lot of introspection and thought to be tolerant or actually take a more humble position that one isn't right or the need to be right. So anyway, at least what I've understood over time is that misunderstandings come a lot because each person has got a particular pattern in the mind and something triggers a hurt area. So it's not really that the other person is fully hurting one. It's that already one is coming with a mind that's programmed a particular way. So the mind responds instinctively to something. It's like it's something stimulates that hurt. So it just, one can come to see that person who's triggered that hurt or feeling of being offended as an excellent barometer for how well one is doing one's internal work of reflecting, because as soon as one actually comes to recognize the pattern of one's own mind and the work one needs to do oneself and acknowledge it and do the necessary things to take care of oneself, then it's very easy to actually recognize that the hurt isn't coming from outside a lot of the time. So over time, even that person who does trigger one that way, one will actually welcome that person and see that person as how excellent they're serving as a barometer of how well I'm doing my introspection and work, my own internal work.
So
just a thought on the matter.
Acharya, want to close it out? Save the best for the last. All right. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for your comments and for hearing. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Thank you.